All right, getting right into it. Today's deep dive is going to take us into the wild world of ANNs.
ANs.
Artificial neural networks, obviously.
Yeah, gotta love a good acronym.
Well, we're talking about some pretty complex stuff. You sent over some dense Wikipedia articles on neural networks. And honestly, it's the tech behind, well, so much these days.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything from those Netflix recommendations that feel like they're reading your mind
Right.
to like the latest breakthroughs in how doctors diagnose diseases, it's incredible.
So let's extract some of that gold, make it understandable. What are some of the most fascinating insights from all of this?
Okay, well, I think we got to start with the name, right? Neural networks. It sounds like they're just straight up copying the human brain.
Yeah, totally.
But the reality is a bit more nuanced. It's like ANNs took inspiration from the brain as a starting point, but they've kind of diverged.
Oh, interesting. So it's not just about replicating biology, it's more about taking the core idea and like running with it.
Exactly. Think about it this way. We were inspired by birds to make airplanes, right? But airplanes don't flap their wings.
Yeah.
Different approach, same goal. And ANNs are doing that with intelligence. They're all about problem solving, even if the methods don't perfectly mirror our own brains.
I like that. Different approach, same goal.
Right.
Okay, so how do these problem-solving systems actually work? I know our source material dives into the whole anatomy of a network. Sounds a little intense, like we're about to dissect something.
No scalpels here, don't worry. But you're right, there's a structure. So, like, our brains have neurons, right? ANNs have their own version called, you guessed it, artificial neurons.
Great test.
And picture it like a really tiny processor. It takes in some information, does a super quick calculation, and then passes the result along.
Okay, so each neuron is like one step in a chain, processing and passing.
Exactly, you're getting it. And those connections, those links between the neurons, we call those edges. Now, here's where it gets really cool. Each connection, each edge has a weight.
Oh, wait. Okay, so some connections are stronger than others.
Exactly. It's like saying, how much influence does this one neuron have over another?
It's like how in real life you might value some people's opinions more than others,
Right.
right?
Yes, 100%. And just like we learn to trust certain opinions more over time, those weights, they actually get adjusted during the learning process. That's
Right.
what makes these networks so powerful.
Ah, see the learning aspect. Because otherwise, it's just like a fancy calculator, right?
Yeah, totally. It's the ability to learn from data that makes them so transformative.
Absolutely. So, how does that work? How does a network actually learn?
Well, the source material, it calls it empirical risk minimization, which, yeah, sounds kind of intimidating, but basically means learning through trial and error.
Oh, okay. So, like practicing anything, really.
Exactly. You try, you mess up, you adjust, and hopefully you get better, right?
Right. Practice makes perfect, even for AI.
Exactly. So the network processes data, makes predictions based on that data, and then it compares those predictions to what actually happened. And the goal is to, minimize those errors over time.
So, if a connection, one of those edges with the weights, if it leads to a bunch of wrong answers, the network learns to ignore it, right? Or at least not take it as seriously.
Exactly. It's like, if a friend gives you advice and it backfires a few times, you might start taking their advice with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You still value the friendship, but you learn to, maybe not trust their judgment as much. That's kind of what those weights are doing.
Fascinating. Now, I'll be honest, the Wikipedia article got a bit much for me when it started talking about things like gradient-based methods and backpropagation.
Oh, yeah, those are important concepts, but they're really about the mechanics of how the learning happens. You don't need to get too bogged down in the nitty-gritty math.
Okay, good, because I was already feeling a headache coming on.
But basically, think of these as tools, algorithms, that help the ANN adjust those weights based on the errors it's making. Like having a super smart coach that could analyze your performance and tell you what tiny adjustments will make a huge difference.
So backpropagation is like the secret sauce, the special training technique.
In a way, yeah. Because before that, researchers were basically tweaking weights manually, and that just wasn't scalable. But backpropagation made it possible to train much deeper networks with tons of layers, and those deeper networks could learn way more complex patterns.
Okay, so it's not just about having more neurons, it's about organizing them, making those connections, and having the right tools to train them effectively.
Exactly.
It's like you can have all the best ingredients, but if you don't know how to cook, you're not going to end up with a very good meal, right?
100%. And speaking of good ingredients, we've talked about neurons, connections, but those are organized too. That's where layers come in.
Layers, okay, like layers in a cake.
Kind of. Think of it this way. Just like our brains have different areas that do different things, ANNs arrange their neurons into layers. So you have the input layer, which takes in the initial data, the raw information.
Okay, so that's like the raw ingredients before you start cooking.
Exactly. Then you have one or more hidden layers, and this is where the magic really starts to happen.
Hidden layers. What makes them so special?
That's where the network processes, transforms that raw data. It's like mixing, chopping, adding spices. This is where the network starts to learn those complex patterns.
Okay, so the hidden layers are where the ANN starts to make sense of everything, find those hidden connections in the data.
Exactly.
This is making me hungry, by the way.
Yeah, I know, right? And then finally, you have the output layer. So this is the finished dish, the result of all that processing and learning. It takes the processed information from those hidden layers, and it spits out the final prediction or classification.
Okay, so input layer is raw data. Hidden layers do the heavy lifting, the analysis, and the output layer serves up the result.
You got it. It's like a well-coordinated kitchen, you know? Everyone's working together.
Now, this whole thing, this field of ANNs, this didn't just appear overnight, right?
Oh, not at all. The history here is actually fascinating. It goes way back, further than most people realize.
Oh, really? How far back are we talking?
Well, some of the, like, fundamental concepts that underpin ANNs, you can trace those back to the 19th century, believe it or not.
No way. Seriously. I always thought of neural networks as, like, cutting-edge computer science, not, like, 19th century math.
I know, right? Oh, wild. But, yeah, back then, they were already wrestling with ideas about how to find patterns in data. For example, there's this method called least squares, developed in the early 1800s.
Okay.
And that's basically what we now call linear regression, finding the line of best fit.
Wow. So even without computers, they were already trying to make sense of data, find those trends?
Exactly. They didn't have fancy algorithms or anything, so it was way more tedious. But those early explorations really laid the groundwork for everything that came later.
So they planted the seeds even if they couldn't see the full tree that would grow.
Exactly. And then, moving into the 20th century, things started to get even more interesting. You know, those early folks, they really set the stage, didn't they? But things really took off, I'd say, around the 1940s and 50s.
Okay, so what happened then? We're getting closer to the computer age, right?
Exactly. So in 1943... we have Warren McCulloch and Walter Pitts.
Okay.
And they came up with this, like, computational model for neural networks.
So they were actually trying to build one, like, physically.
Well, not exactly. I mean, keep in mind, computers back then were, like, room-sized behemoths. But they created this model, this theoretical framework for how artificial neurons could be connected to actually perform logical operations.
Oh, interesting. So it was more like a blueprint than an actual working machine?
Yeah, you could say that. Like, they figured out the architecture, the basic design principles.
Okay, so what was the next step then? How do we go from blueprint to a working model?
Well, that's where Donald Hebb comes in, late 1940s.
Okay.
He proposed this learning rule, which we now call Hebbian learning. And this was huge because it was all about how these networks could actually learn from data.
Oh, okay. So this is where things start to get really interesting in terms of, like, real intelligence.
Exactly. And you know what his big idea was? Mm-hmm. It was so simple, but so profound. He said, neurons that fire together, wire together.
Neurons that fire together, wire together. I kind of get it, but can you break that down a bit more?
Sure. So basically, it means the more two neurons are activated at the same time, the stronger the connection between them becomes.
Oh, okay. So it's like the more you use a pathway in the brain, the stronger that pathway gets.
Exactly. Practice makes perfect, right?
Yeah.
And Hebbian learning was a way to apply that principle to artificial neurons.
So this was a huge step towards creating machines that could actually adapt, learn from their experiences.
Absolutely. It paved the way for everything that came after. And this brings us to, I think, one of the most iconic moments in AI history. The perceptron.
The perceptron, yeah. That rings a bell. It's a big deal, right?
Oh, huge. It was one of the first artificial neural networks that actually worked, developed by Frank Rosenblatt in 1958. And people were blown away because it could actually do stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it could recognize patterns, classify data into categories. It was basic by today's standards, but it was a proof of concept.
So it was like the first time a machine had actually learned something in a way that felt kind of, I don't know, human-like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it sparked this, like, wave of optimism about the future of AI. Hmm. People thought, okay, we're on the verge of creating truly intelligent machines.
So what happened? Because I feel like we've had a few of these, like, AI hype cycles over the years. What went wrong with the perceptron?
Well, it had its limitations. You see, it was only a single-layer network.
Sure.
And what researchers eventually realized was that to really unlock the power of these networks, you needed more layers. You needed those hidden layers we were talking about earlier. Yeah.
Ah, okay. So it's not just about having more neurons. It's about how you organize them, how deep you build the network.
Exactly. It's like the difference between a single-story building and a skyscraper.
Yeah.
Like you can pack a lot more into a skyscraper.
Makes sense. So how did they overcome that limitation? How did they start building deeper networks?
Well, that's a story of like ingenuity and perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
Because training those deeper networks, it wasn't easy. Remember backpropagation?
Yeah, we talked about that earlier, the super smart coach for ANNs.
Right. Well, backpropagation was a game changer. It gave researchers a way to efficiently train those deeper networks, those networks with multiple hidden layers.
Okay, so backpropagation allowed for more complexity, which meant more learning capacity.
Exactly. It was like giving researchers the tools to build not just houses, but entire cities with all their intricate connections and layers.
And that brings us to, like, the modern era of ANNs, right? Where we have these incredibly sophisticated networks that can do all sorts of amazing things.
Exactly. And those deeper networks, they paved the way for, like, specialized ANNs. Networks designed for specific types of data.
Okay, I like where this is going. So we're not just talking about one-size-fits-all neural networks anymore. There are different types for different tasks.
You got it. So, for example, you have convolutional neural networks, or CNNs.
CNNs. Okay. I think I've heard of those. They're really good with images, right?
You're right on the money. CNNs are all about visual data, facial recognition, medical imaging, self-driving cars. They're all powered by CNNs.
So we've basically created artificial eyes that can see and understand the world just like we do.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty mind-blowing when you think about it. And the way they do it, it's actually quite elegant. They use these special layers called convolutional layers.
Okay.
And what those layers do is they scan images for specific features like edges, corners, shapes, the building blocks of any visual scene.
So it's like having a team of experts, each one looking for a specific detail, and together they build up a complete picture.
Yes, a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
It's like, remember those optical illusions where you see one thing and then suddenly, boom, you see something completely different?
Yeah, totally.
CNNs are kind of like that. They can see those hidden patterns, those relationships within visual data that we might miss.
Amazing. But visual data, that's just one part of our world, right? We also have language, music, things that happen over time. How do ANNs handle that kind of sequential information?
Great question. And that's where another specialized network comes, the LSTM.
LSTM. Okay. What does that stand for?
It stands for long short-term memory.
Long short-term memory. Okay. That sounds way more like a human brain thing than a computer thing.
Right. It's a very evocative name. And it's a good one because LSTMs are designed to process sequential data, things like sentences, music, even stock prices.
Okay, so if CNNs are our artificial eyes, then LSTMs are our artificial, what, memories?
Kind of. You see, with language, the meaning of a word often depends on the words that came before it, right?
Yeah.
Context is everything.
Right.
And LSTMs, they're able to remember that context. They have this memory that allows them to understand not just individual words, but the sequence of words, the meaning that unfolds over time.
So it's like giving an ANN a sense of history. A way to connect the past to the present.
Exactly. And this ability to understand sequences.
Mm.
It's what makes LSTM so powerful for tasks like language translation, speech recognition, even generating music.
So we have networks that can see, networks that can remember. Are there networks that can, like, imagine?
You're thinking of GANs.
GANs.
Generative adversarial networks.
Okay, that sounds kind of intimidating.
It's a mouthful, right?
Yeah.
But it's actually a really cool concept. So with GANs, you essentially have two networks that are pitted against each other, like in a competition.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so like a neural network duel, what are they competing over?
So you have one network called the generator, and its job is to create something new.
Yeah.
It could be an image, a piece of music, even code.
Okay.
And then you have the second network, the discriminator.
Yeah.
And its job is to judge the generator's work, to figure out if it's real or fake.
So it's like a constant game of cat and mouse, with the generator trying to fool the discriminator and the discriminator getting better and better at spotting the fakes.
Exactly. And the crazy thing is, as they compete, they both get better. The generator gets better at creating realistic outputs, and the discriminator gets better at spotting the fakes. It's like an arms race of creativity and discernment.
And what kind of results are we seeing from this? Like AI duel.
Well, some of it is pretty mind-blowing, to be honest. GANs are now being used to create photorealistic images, compose music that sounds like it was written by a human, even write news articles that are almost indistinguishable from real ones.
So we've gone from machines that can learn to machines that can create. It's both exciting and, I have to admit, a little bit scary. Like, where does it end?
Yeah, it definitely raises some big questions, both ethical and philosophical. But I think it's important to remember that all of these amazing capabilities, they come with challenges too.
Right. It's not all sunshine and roses. There are downsides, right?
Exactly. And one of the biggest challenges is data. ANNs, they need a ton of data to learn effectively.
So it's not just about having the right algorithms. It's about feeding those algorithms a massive amount of information.
Exactly. We're talking about data sets with millions, billions of data points. And in many fields, getting at that much data, especially high quality data, it's really difficult and expensive.
It makes sense though, right? If you're trying to teach a machine to understand something as complex as like human language, you can't just show it a few sentences. It needs to see millions of examples, all the different ways we use language.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And even when you have enough data, there's this other challenge, which some people call the black box problem.
The black box problem. Okay, now that definitely sounds ominous. What is that?
It refers to the fact that with ANNs, it can be really hard to understand why they make a particular decision. Like, we know what data we put in and we see the output, but the actual process, the reasoning that happens in those hidden layers, it's kind of a mystery.
So it's like we've created these incredibly smart machines, but we don't always understand how their minds work.
Yeah, in a nutshell. And that can be a problem, especially in areas like healthcare or finance, where trust and transparency are so important.
Right. If an AI is making a decision that could affect your health or your finances, you want to know why it's making that decision, not just blindly trust it. Right.
Exactly. And that's one of the big challenges researchers are working on right now, making these powerful networks more transparent, more interpretable.
That makes sense. So data and transparency, those are two big challenges. Are there any others?
Well, another big one is the sheer computing power required to train these massive neural networks.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the hardware demands are huge. Like, we're talking massive amounts of processing power, energy consumption. It's a big deal.
So it's not like anyone with a laptop and a Wi-Fi connection can just start training their own, like, super intelligent AI?
No, not quite yet anyway.
So it's resource intensive, which probably has all sorts of implications in terms of, like, who has access to this technology? Who gets to benefit from it?
Oh,
right?
For sure. I mean, that's a whole other conversation about equity and access. And it's a big one. Absolutely. But even with those challenges, it's clear that ANNs are already having a huge impact.
Oh, without a doubt. They're revolutionizing entire industries already. Healthcare, finance, even the arts. And we're just getting started, really.
It really is mind-boggling and kind of awe-inspiring when you think about how far we've come, like from those early days of clunky robots to, well, this neural networks that can learn and adapt and, dare I say, even create.
It's a wild ride for sure.
And it really makes you think about, like, what does it even mean to be intelligent, right? If machines can do all these things that we used to think were uniquely human.
Right. It challenges our assumptions about intelligence, about consciousness, about what it means to be human even.
It's like science fiction is becoming reality right in front of our eyes.
Yeah. And I think that's what's both exciting and, let's be honest, a little bit unsettling about it.
Oh, absolutely. So for our listener who might be listening to all of this and thinking, okay, this is amazing, but also kind of terrifying, what are the key takeaways from our deep dive here?
Well, I think the biggest one is that artificial neural networks, they're powerful tools, like really powerful, and they have the potential to do a lot of good in the world.
But like any powerful tool, they can be misused.
Right, exactly. It's on us to make sure that we're developing and using this technology responsibly. And that means thinking about the ethical implications, the potential risks, like, you know, bias in the data, lack of transparency, all of that.
It's about finding that balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Between the potential benefits and the potential risks and making sure we're steering this technology in the right direction.
Absolutely. And that's why I think these conversations like we're having right now, they're so important.
Because knowledge is power, right? The more we understand about how these technologies work, the better equipped we are to make informed decisions about their future.
Exactly.
So to wrap things up here, to leave our listener with one final thought, one thing that wasn't explicitly mentioned in all those Wikipedia articles, what excites you most about the future of ANNs? What possibility, no matter how speculative, really gets you fired up?
Ooh, that's a good one. You know, for me, it's the potential for ANNs to help us solve some of the really big problems, the ones that have stumped us for, like, centuries.
Okay, like what? Give me an example.
Well, like curing diseases. combating climate change, you know, those really big, hairy, audacious goals that humanity's been striving for.
So using these powerful artificial minds, in a sense, to help us understand our own world, our own universe even, in ways we couldn't possibly do on our own.
Exactly. It's not about humans versus machines. It's about humans and machines working together, combining our strengths to create something truly extraordinary.
I love that. Collaboration, not competition. Well, on that inspiring note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into the world of artificial neural networks. To our listener, thanks for coming along for the ride. Keep those brains engaged, and we'll catch you next time.